I thought today we would, since we spent earlier in the week talking primarily about chametz, I thought today we would speak a little bit more about the mitzvahs halayla, about the positive aspects of Pesach. So I thought that the best way to do this, rather than, let's say, give you a whole shiur about matzah, a whole shiur about maris, like that, I thought we'd kind of go more really along the order of the Seder, and just make a few points, you know, some of the things you're probably familiar with, some of them may be new for you, some things may be machloksim, some may be different minhagim. But I'll just try really, you know, again, we only have about a little less than an hour, to just kind of highlight what I think are some of the important features that a person should be aware of, just to observe the mitzvahs of the Seder properly. So we'll go according to the Kaddish Ruach HaTzkabes Yachatz, even though the poem doesn't officially appear in Chazal, but it's an old poem and it helps us go pretty simply. So we open up the Seder with Kaddish. So Kaddish really is a dual mitzvah. It's the mitzvah of Kiddush. It's no better than any other Yontif night. But Kaddish is also the first of the Dalakosos. And since it's first of the Dalakosos, therefore it's subject to many of the halachas that the Dalakosos have that in fact don't even apply to Kiddush. So one of those halachas is that you have to recite Kaddish after dark. On a regular Friday night, a regular Yontif night, you can make Kiddush early, as long as you're Makabel Shabbos Yontif early. On Pesach night, it has to be Balayla, everything has to be at night. So therefore one cannot begin Kiddush until it's actually dark. So some of these people have the shaylos, and I have many of these shaylos from people. Very often they go to a Seder, or perhaps some of the people are not necessarily observant yet, and it's difficult for them to stop the Seder in the 9 o'clock at night, whatever it is. So they want to get a jump start on things. That's an issue. It's a very serious problem. How to actually maneuver to begin the Seder early. So again, in the normal circumstances, one should really try to wait until Seif Kicham. It doesn't have to be an hour and a half after sunset, but it's got to be really what's called Seif Kicham when the stars come out. Usually most shuls wait a little bit to Davar Meir at the Seder night, so by the time you get home, it's usually already dark. There's another difference that Pesach night has above and beyond other nights of the year in terms of Kaddish, and that's who has to recite Kaddish. And a regular Kiddush, so one person can say Kiddush for everybody else, I can be motzi in Kiddush, that's perfectly acceptable in the Chachila. In fact, there are some opinions that maintain that on Pesach night you do the same thing. You don't have to drink Dalakosa, someone could drink for you. So we don't follow that opinion. Our view is that one person can say the Kiddush for you, you can be yotzi through the hearing of the Kiddush, but then you have to drink your own cup. And the reason being is that on Pesach night, the actual drinking of the four cups is important. That's called Derech Eros, that's celebrating the freedom, and therefore I can't celebrate your freedom. So I can be Yotzei, the Bor Priya Gofen, and the Kiddush with somebody else, but the actual drinking of the cup I have to do. How much do I have to drink of this cup? So here also there's a difference between Pesach night and a regular Kiddush. Regular Kiddush, as long as one person drinks what's called Moe Lugmo, which is about a cheekful of wine, or approximately about an ounce and a half or so, for a normal size cheekful, approximately an ounce and a half of wine, that's okay for the mitzvah of Kiddush. Whereas on Pesach night, one is really, according to many, supposed to drink most of the cup. So you pick the size of your Kiddush cup. It should be a minimum of whatever size the Kiddush cup is, but there's a different opinion. Is it 3 ounces, 3 ounces, 4 ounces? Within that range of, strictly speaking, 3 ounces is sufficient. So once you use a Kiddush cup, it's a minimum of 3 ounces, and once you drink most of the cup. That's true for all of the Dalakosos to fulfill the mitzvah properly. Another possible difference between the Kiddush and Pesach night and the rest of the year is in terms of wine versus grape juice. On a regular Kiddush and Shabbos and Yom Tov, strictly speaking, grape juice is perfectly okay. It's the same halachically as wine. On Pesach night, there is an issue in the poskim whether grape juice is sufficient. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that one is required to drink wine on Pesach night, and the reason being that that's considered to be derech cheirus, that's considered to be the celebration of freedom. And the Rabbi Soloveitchik was of the opinion that if a person really doesn't like wine, he really prefers grape juice, and then to him it's more freedom to drink the grape juice. So somewhat of a question whether it's objectively freedom or subjectively freedom. So usually when I tell people a person really doesn't taste wine, a person is okay with drinking wine, so I tell people that they should drink wine. This is, I'm not making any legal statement right now. Those who are underage or drinking should consult their advisors as to how to perform the mitzvah properly. But one who is legally permissible to drink wine, so I recommend that they drink wine at the Seder. You're not obligated to have the highest proof wine. You can have a low proof wine also, so you don't have to get knocked out by the time Manashtana starts. But one should try, if one is able to, so one should try to drink wine at the Seder. I have been asked by people on occasion if somebody has an alcohol problem, and they're on treatment that they're supposed to stay away from alcohol. So the answer for such a person is absolutely one should not be drinking wine. One should in no shape or form use the Seder night as an opportunity to slip back or to having any of these kinds of issues. So again, anyone who has these kinds of particular issues should contact a Rav to be guided properly what to do. So after we move to Kadesh, so we fulfill the first mitzvah of the Seder, then we move to Orchatz. Why are we washing our hands at the Seder altogether? So the Gemara explains that we're...
Question. Seva, which is connected to the first couple, right. So how Lemaisa is the best way to fulfill it? Like, do you have to be leaning? Like, should you... I heard that the Rav said, like, you should lean on your hand, like, leaning back in the air is not really...
You put a pillow behind you and you're like a little comfy and drink and try not to spill too much on your kittle or on your shirt.
Well, like, does it have to be that you're leaning against something? Or just
you're leaning on your pillow supporting your head, but it's also leaning. It doesn't say exactly how to do a seva properly. As long as you're leaning to the left and there's something that's supporting you a little bit, that's called a seva. That's what stomach good enough. We'll talk a little bit more about a seder afterwards. A seder is kind of something that you write, generalizes throughout the seder.
If you were to combine wine and grape juice, what would be, like, could there just be a little bit of wine?
Yes, I'm not a big fan of combining wine and grape juice. It usually doesn't taste so great. So the idea is supposed to, the wine is supposed to be a derech chayra, so you get this mixture of, you know, concoction of, which, you know, tastes a little schmach. I'm not sure whether, you may be losing out, according to everybody. So either find a very, very low proof wine that you, these 4% wines, it's much like grape juice, it's a grape juice with a kick to it. There was a certain kind of wine that several years ago, I don't know if they still make called Cal or something.
Yeah.
So they used to make it.
I can't find it.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have it now, but a couple of years ago they came out with three. It was much a joke. Apparently when they were selling it in Europe, so apparently the European Union wouldn't register it as wine or something. I don't know what it was. They taxed it like grape juice rather than as wine because it was so minor in terms of alcohol content, whatever it was. So getting back to the story. Yeah.
Is red wine preferred to white wine?
It's preferable to use red wine. Those who really, really don't like red wine, like white wine, could use white wine, but it's preferable to use red wine. Actually, it's interesting that there were Jewish communities in Europe that used to prefer dafka to use white wine because of blood libels. They didn't want to stop any trouble. But Baruch Hashem, you know, we don't have that problem. So if everything else is equal, red wine is preferred. So we move on to Orchatz. The Gemara says in Pesachim that the reason why we wash Orchatz at this point is because we're about to eat a wet vegetable. So the halacha is that all year long we eat a wet fruit or vegetable, because of complicated tumor reasons, one is supposed to always wash the kilos yadayim. So there is a big machlokas that we showed him, whether that halach of washing the kilos yadayim before wet fruits and vegetables really applies today. And again, it's beyond the scope right now of the Seder, but it's a machlokas in Hilchos Matilos Yadayim, whether we actually practice that halach or not. So the Taz in Hilchos Pesach has a critique on many people. The Taz says, you know, all year long, nobody washes. Most people aren't so careful. They eat a wet apple, then they won't bother washing. They'll eat a... You know, they'll dip their dip a donut in coffee or something. It's a wet donut, so they won't wash the Tulsi Daim. Comes Pesach night, everyone becomes very firm. Comes Pesach night, everybody washes the Tulsi Daim and runs to go wash Orchatz. So the Taz, you have to know from the 1600s in Poland, it wasn't the funniest place in the world, so the humor wasn't that great either, but the Taz throws in a joke. So he says that, why is it that all year long nobody cares about this, and Pesach and everyone's so from? That's his line. That's about the greatest joke you can get out of a parish on the Sabbath Shulchan Aruch. So what's the answer to the question? So the answer is a few different answers. So one answer is maybe everyone's wrong. Maybe everybody should really be washing all year long. That's not the right thing to do. So others defend that it's if defends the practice is based on the following, that many Rishonim hold that mitzvah of washing the Tulsi Daim, not the Tulsi Daim before bread, that's for a different reason, but the Tulsi Daim before wet fruit is only at a time when actually ate food b'tahara, when one was makbid and tumah b'tahara, which we don't do b'zman hazeh. So all year long, we're not makbid and tumah b'tahara, so we don't care about it, we don't follow this halacha. But on Pesach night, we try to relive the Beis HaMikdash. We do many things on Pesach night to reminisce what it was like b'zman shel Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim. So this is one of those things we do as well, that we dafka wash, and we eat the food in the state of Tara to be as close to the Makom as the Beis HaMikdash as we can. That's the defense of the Minigol, and that's in fact the reason why we don't recite a bracha by Orchatz. Vilna Gaon is of the opinion that you have to make a bracha. It's a real mitzvah. You have to wash with a bracha. And our minhag is that we don't really wash with it. We wash, but we don't wash with the bracha. That's why there are even some communities where only the father washes. Not even everybody gets up to wash in Rosh Chodesh. When I was a kid, that's what we used to do. That was our minhag. Only my father. And I got older, so I realized that others claimed that everybody should wash, so I started washing also. So again, the bottom line is we wash in Rosh Chodesh, albeit without a bracha for whatever reason.
Whose explanation was this?
The Nitziv. So when you wash Rosh Chodesh, you don't wash Rosh Chodesh, it's funny, you get the karpas.
You said washing on wet fruits and vegetables. Doesn't
the
Shulchan
Aruch say one washes on wet fruits is necessary? No, that's a dry fruit. That's fruit,
that was wet, then you dried it.
Right. But if it's still wet, then it's a problem. Right. Again, it's beyond the scope in terms of fruit. But that would be not enough.
So, might we not knowing that nowadays, like,
oh,
if it's wet?
So many people are knowing that, yeah. Many people try to be knowing that, but many people are not so careful about it. So we're trying to...
We should
be. It's better to be careful about it. It's better if you can. You know, move to karpas. So karpas, the Gemara says, is not really a mitzvah. That's why, in fact, we're not mapping. We don't need a kizayis of karpas necessarily. Karpas is just to get the children to ask the question. So you have to do a funny thing. You dip a little bit before the meal, something somewhat out of the ordinary, so we get the children to ask. So that's karpas. What kind of a vegetable are we supposed to use for karpas? So the Gemara doesn't really say. The Gemara says you can use whatever you want. The only things you should not use. You should not use something that could be used for maror, because if you use something that could be used for maror, you get into a whole complication when to recite the halakha as maror. How could you eat the maror now and not make the bracha, but you're not being doing mitzvah now? So it gets complicated. So don't just stay away from the lettuces. Don't use anything that smacks of maror for karpas. So they're different than hagim. Different people have different customs as well as for karpas. Some of the some poskim prefer there should be a green. The Gemara uses the red yarukah, so that's upside green. So some like to use green in Eastern Europe. There was nothing green that grew, especially not in April time. So in Poland, what was the only thing that grew? They only ate one thing. How's the famous Yiddish song go? The song Zuntik Bulbas. No song Zuntik Bulbas, Muntik Bulbas. Zuntik Bulbas Shabbos, the Bulbas Kugel or something. That's what they ate. So that's all they ate all year long. That's all they ate at the Seder also. So when I was a kid, so we used to eat potatoes. That's the way my grandmother did it when she grew up. That's what my great grandmother did. My great grandmother, very, very back to my Shavani, eat potatoes. Probably not to my Shavani because potatoes didn't exist in Eastern Europe until about 500 years ago. Somebody found them in Ireland, whatever it was. Anyway, whatever it was. So. And other people don't like potatoes. Other people use green kinds of vegetables. So over the years, some of my family may have also changed, so they started to use green things. So I personally use like either a cucumber or a green pepper or something like that. It should be green and it's a vegetable. It's a bar abdomen shrite. So I told my kids a couple of years ago that it doesn't really have to be a cucumber. It doesn't really have to be a green pepper. It can really technically be anything. It doesn't really even have to be green. So I even said to a joke to one of my kids, I happen to know there was one rub used to use a banana. So Bar Priya Adam gives a banana. So go figure. So my son, Bayak, 10 years old, he decided it's his minute to use a banana. So Kachava. So 2-3 years ago, he started using a banana. So he used it 1 or 2 years. It wasn't exciting enough anymore. Because, once he did it already once or twice, everyone laughed at him and then it was over. So now he decided he's using something else. I think this year he wants to use a watermelon. So next year he's going to use a pineapple. Whatever, it's got to be a Bar Priya Adam and shine. Probably more correct, it should be in the vegetable family. It's not a real minute. The minute, the halacha is you have to have a vegetable. It's something that's Bar Priya Adam, that's all. Use what? Except my son. There's a new minute. You see, in 100 years from now, you'll be hearing there was a new minute that started in Bergenfield, New Jersey. Depends how big a rubber becomes a big rubber. We'll have all this time, we'll start using bananas. Anything is good. Whatever you want to use is good. I use either green pepper or cucumber, but anything you want is fine. The only thing is there's an interesting shayla about using an onion. There are some people who use any members of Lubavitch, any Chabadniks here? Yeah. Use onions? Uh-huh. So it's very good. So I'll tell you a funny story. So about 10 years ago, I was saying a shiur, and I said, you just have to make sure that the thing that you use is a real Bar Priya Adama. So I said, for that reason, you probably shouldn't use an onion. I said, because a raw onion is not supposed to make a Bar Priya Adama on it. Those who look, it says brachas. Maybe like last year, some of you guys went for last year for the brachas. No, whatever, anyway. So there's a halacha that if you eat a vegetable that's not a normal to eat as a raw, only cooked, and it's not a Bar Priya Adama. It's a complicated sugya. What bracha you make on a raw onion? So I said at the time, I said, it's probably preferable. You shouldn't use onion for karpas because it's not so posh to make a Bar Priya Adama on it. So some kid in the back raised his hands. Rabbi, that's what we do. We use onions. He said, okay. I said, it's probably not correct. So then he said, but that's not the Lubavitcher Rabbi, where we come from, that's what he told us to use. So I thought from it, I said, oh yeah, now it all makes sense. Because the Shulchan Aruch HaRab, who was the original, the first Lubavitcher Rabbi, the Baal HaTanya, he happens to paskin that the bracha on onions is bar pri adama, on raw onions. It's a lom dishim achleikis acharon, the Mishnah Berurah happens not to paskin that way. So I said, now I understand. I said, those who follow the Shulchan Aruch HaRab, the Lubavitchers who follow his psakim, so according to him, you can use an onion. But those who follow the Mishnah Berurah, who wouldn't make a bar pri adama on onions, so you probably shouldn't. So you want to continue use your onions, you can use your onions. But those who follow the Mishnah Berurah don't have the tradition to follow the Shulchan Aruch HaRab, should probably not use an onion because of this question in terms of the bracha. So we want to have a little bit of carapace, and the custom here is strange. Most things that they say, we always try to eat more. Usually the more the merrier. This is the only thing we try to eat less. We don't try not to eat a kezayis of carapace. The reason being because the shot of a bracha chrona on the carapace. It's not so posh whether you're supposed to make a bracha chrona. A whole complicated story, because the hadama is potent the moror also. So therefore, when one makes the bar pri adama, one has in mind that this should cover the bar pri adama for the moror that you can eat in 2 hours from now. And it's preferable to eat less than a kezayis of carapace, not to get involved in any bracha chrona type of a shayla. Yeah.
Your question, part two would be in the family of
mother,
or it's not the same?
Parsley is not. I'll tell you my only hesitation. I know a lot of people use parsley. Does anybody eat parsley? Is parsley something that's normally eaten today?
Yeah.
No, it's a separate to eat a piece of parsley?
No, it's used as a garnish.
What? Right. So the question is, not so posh as hadama then. No, I think it opens brachas. If it's something that's never eaten normally, I don't know, whatever it is, people use parsley, that's the old minig, people use parsley, so I'm not going to question it. Anything that you're using, and we'll get tomorrow a little bit later, let's make sure it's clear of bugs. Whatever the standard is cleaning bugs, I'll make sure it's clean. Then we move to karpas, to yachatz. The yachatz is when we break the afikomen and break the matzah in half for the purposes of afikomen. We use three matzahs, but they're different than about this. Most people use three matzahs at the seder, and the reason for the three matzahs is that there's a mitzvah of Lecha Mishnah. So Lecha Mishnah requires, like any other shops in Yontif, to have two whole challahs, two whole matzahs. And then there's a din of Lechem Oni. Lechem Oni means that just as a poor man eats a half a piece, he doesn't eat everything at once, he puts a little bit aside for later, doesn't know where he's going to have food later. So just as a poor person breaks aside his matzah, so too we break the matzah also. So that's what many Rishonim write in Masechet Pesachim. If you're going to use two matzahs, you're going to break one matzah, what happens to your Lecha Mishnah? You have to use three matzahs. So you have two matzahs for Lecha Mishnah, and then a broken matzah for the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. There are some who have a custom of two matzahs. They only use two matzahs, and they break the matzah, and they end up making a Lecha Mishnah on one day of matzahs. Anyone here has that custom? Good. If you don't have a custom, so don't make up the custom. Most people have a custom of using three matzahs. So we put aside the matzah, we wrap it up and put it away for safekeeping. Is there any reason why we hide the afikomen except to make the kids excited? So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Soloveitchik's grandfather, suggested a beautiful insight. Reb Chaim suggested that the afikomen is going to be eaten like a zecher korban Pesach. So there's a halacha, when you have a meat of a korban, you can't just have it sitting around on the table, everyone's going to touch, because maybe somebody's tummy at the table, you have to keep it careful, because anyone whose tummy is not allowed to touch the korban. So they would take the piece of the korban, they would take the meat of the korban Pesach, and they would put it away, they would hide it, they would keep it in a way that nobody who wasn't supposed to touch it would touch it. So he said, that's what we try to do with the korban Pesach. We try to keep it that nobody goes anywhere near it. The only problem is, somebody goes near it, the kids go near it, and they find it. So the original minhag, says Reb Chaim, was to hide the korban Pesach. Then the new minhag became to find the korban Pesach, to play a hide and go seek, and to get a present out of it. But the original minhag was tzofim, was to take that afikomen and put it away for safekeeping, that nobody, quote unquote, tummy should come near it, so it should be like a korban Pesach. Anyway, so after we finish yachatz, so we perform the mitzvah of Magid. So the mitzvah of Magid is clearly the longest mitzvah we perform at the Seder. It's a mitzvah min HaTorah, we got it, till Mincha. And there are a few things just to be aware of to perform this mitzvah properly. So first of all, everybody is supposed to either be saying the Magid, or should be Yotze the Magid through Shemei Ka'onah, through somebody else saying and having in mind to be Motzi them. So people have to be present at the time of Magid. The key parts of Magid are the Avodah Vayinu, and mitchila of the avodah zarah hayu avaseinu, the one passage that speaks about physical deliverance, and the other passage that speaks about spiritual deliverance. Then the Rabbi Gamliel HaOmer is also an integral part of the Magid, according to some, according to others, it's another kind of a mitzvah. Everyone should be present as well. Everyone should be present, and everybody should have in mind to be yotze, and everybody should understand what's going on. Therefore, the Rishonim already write that those passages at the Seder, if there are people at the Seder who do not understand Hebrew, those passages should be explained into the language that people understand. Then you have a custom of saying the whole Haggadah, to translate the whole Haggadah, which is fine, which is wonderful. So again, if everyone understands Hebrew, there's no mitzvah to say the Haggadah in English, but if there are people there who don't understand, then one should definitely either literally translate it or paraphrase it or get it to such an idea that people really get the gist of what's going on at the Seder, particularly at those passages. You don't really have to. You don't really have to say. You could technically say the whole thing in English. Yeah, you could. There's no doubt a mitzvah to say in Hebrew. A lot of people like to say it in Hebrew for traditional feeling, to say it quickly in Hebrew and then spend the bulk of the time translating it into English. I think it's probably more of a formal. Otherwise, it becomes just kind of like reading a novel together. That's probably a better way to do it that way.
Is it a good idea to announce that, have in mind to be, the reader, because not everyone's so educated, so some people read to themselves, so maybe we should announce they should have in mind that.
Right, okay, if you feel that'll help, right, okay, not a bad idea. Okay. So called Marbel Sap Batis Mitzvah Raisin Meshubuch, that's clearly an integral part of Magid, and one should try to be Marbel as best as possible. Sometimes you're all a bachurim, so you're not really running to say to yourselves, that it's Hashem, you'll become your own balbatim. So one should try to remember that the conversation with the Seder is supposed to be about Yitzhak Mitzrayim. That's the point of the Seder. Not supposed to be a springboard for every hot political discussion or shul politics or any other, or opening day at the city field or whatever other exciting things happen to be going on in your lives that day. So really the goal of the Seder is supposed to be called a marvelous opera, to be related to Yitzhak Mitzrayim and Yadav Amunah, and to Hakar Zatov, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in general, and things which are, of course, Pesach and Pesach related, obviously. That should be clearly the focus of the discussion at the Seder. When we, after we get to the end of Magid, so we begin to say Hallel. Hallel is actually broken up at the Seder. We say the first two prachim of Hallel before we drink the second kos, and then the end of Hallel, much later at the Seder. One is required to say the entire Hallel, each word of Hallel. Sometimes, when it comes to a Kriya Samagila, people get so nervous that they hear every single syllable and every single word. That's true, but the same exact thing is true for Hallel. Not just on Pesach, that is true, whenever we say Hallel. So one has to be careful to say every single word of Hallel, to pronounce the words properly. This is a mitzvah that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle at the Seder. People thought, especially in the second half of Hallel, people are tired, people are ready, the third cup they already have, people are dry, And they kind of mumble through a few words and they hum a little bit and then they miss every other word, so that you don't really fulfill the mitzvah salayla. So the mitzvah is to say literally every word of Hallel, the same way there's a mitzvah to read every word of the Megillah on Purim. So one says, we say those two passages of Hallel, and then we say the bracha of Asher Gi'alanu. The question is, where does this bracha, what's this bracha all about? The bracha appears in the Mishnah. So there are some who say that the bracha of Asher Gi'alanu is like the bracha of She'asa Nisan. The same way on Chanukah we say She'asa Nisim, and on Purim we say She'asa Nisim, so we also say She'asa Nisim here also. The text is a little bit different. We say Asher Gi'alanu, we also say it with Mitzrayim, Gi'alanu, Alanu, Zach, Kenanam. So that's a longer version of She'asa Nisim, and basically it's the same type of a bracha. Then when we finish, so we take the Baruch Pi'agof and Asher Gi'alanu, and we drink the second cup. All the halachas that were relevant to the first cup are relevant to the drinking of the second cup as well, as we said before, the wine versus grape juice, the amount, everybody drinks their own cup, etc. I should mention that women are obligated in all these mitzvos. They're obligated in the halakosos, and women are obligated in matzah, and according to many sipitzis mitzrayim, maror, so women have to participate in all these parts of the Seder. That's sometimes women start to run out, as they're getting ready to get the second cup. So women are already starting to get ready in the kitchen, get things moving, get the soup on the fire. So they should really be instructed that they should be there for the halal, or at least say the halal themselves beforehand, and drink the second cup themselves. Women are obligated to the same extent than men in all these mitzvos. And Haseva is the only thing the Gemara says that technically women are obligated in Haseva. Haseva means to lean to the left side. We lean for the dalakosos and we lean for the different times we eat the matzah. Technically speaking, women are obligated in Haseva. The Gemara says that if it's some women, it wasn't derech, it wasn't normal for women to lean. The Gemara says if she's a woman who's a isha chashuva, that she it is considered to be normal for her to lean, that she should lean, and if not. So the Rambam writes that b'zman hazeh, all our women are nashim chashuvas. That was the Rambam's reference in writing that all the women are nashim chashuvas. So really, all the women should be leaning b'zman hazeh. So the Ramah writes, the reason why the custom in most of the Ashkenazi communities where the women didn't lean is that there's one opinion in Rishon that nobody has to lean today because leaning is not normal anymore. There's the opinion of the Rav Yoh. So the Ramah writes that the women were relying on this opinion of the Rav Yoh. So the question is, if the women are relying on it, why aren't the men relying on it? That's beyond the scope of the whole Shtickle Torah. What's that based on? Right, so it's not really right. There's no Derecheres, but Zmanazeh, stepping up to it. The bottom line is that men do lean with Zmanazeh, and many women do not. So those women who do not lean today are relying on this opinion of the Ramah, according to Rav Yoh. There are some women who do lean today, so whatever a person's particular custom is, if your family doesn't have any given minig, the standard Ashkenazi minig is the women don't lean. I don't know the Sephardic communities, anyone, any insight? I imagine they probably do lean. No? I'm not sure. They don't?
I don't know.
Okay, so again, if one doesn't have any customs to the contrary, the standard Ashkenazi minhag is that women do not lean today. After we drink the second kose, then we get ready to wash. The wash is regular until it's yadayim, until the other until it's yadayim, then we begin the actual mitzvah halayim in terms of the matzah and the maror. So, from the moment that we recite the alef mitzvah yadayim, from the moment that we wash our hands for rachza, one is not supposed to speak until after korech. And the reason being is that you don't talk once you wash, you don't talk. And by the way, you're not supposed to talk once you wash, not once you make the bracha. You're not allowed to talk after you wash the Tilas Yadayim, even before the bracha, just contrary to popular misconception. So once you wash the Tilas Yadayim, you shouldn't speak, because the Hamotzi, you know, the Alechilas Matzah, you're about to recite, covers the Korech as well. So therefore, the proper practice is, according to Shulchan Aruch, is one does not speak until after Korach is over. There was someone who raised the question whether you're allowed to talk with the Lafi Koman, because the Alechaz Matzah covers that also. The meeting is lawful. We assume that that you're allowed to do. But it would have been a nice quiet Seder otherwise. I should tell my kids that maybe next time. But until Korach, one, but Shulchan Aruch says one should not speak unless it's mamash relevant. You need to be some matzah. No one's listening to you. So that you wouldn't be allowed to do. But otherwise, one should not speak. So one washes, one says, one has a piece of matzah. We said before there are three matzahs on the table, so there are different opinions in the Rishon of exactly how to go about making the brachas in terms of how many matzahs to hold. But the standard practice today is that you pick up all three matzahs for Hamotzi Lechem Aretz, then you put the bottom matzah down, and then when you make Alechilas Matzah, you're holding the top matzah and the broken piece of matzah. Then once you try to take a piece of the broken matzah as well as from the whole matzah. And then if you try to divide up for kezayis for everybody, obviously you're going to have more matzahs on the table. So everybody should try to get their kezayis and matzah. That's the only important thing you have to be aware of.
Sorry, Alachilas matzah was the top two?
The top two. The minig is that you hold all three for Amotzi, then you drop the bottom one, and then they'll drop two because you can need it again later. But then you make Alachilas matzah on the one and a half matzahs, and then you take a piece of broken and a piece of whole.
Would telling other people, like, instructions about how to go about it?
Yeah, that would be fine.
You'd have to have a
kezayis
present in the
past
and the middle.
In theory, yes, practically, we'll talk about it in kezayis in a second, okay? So the mitzvah of eating matzah requires that one eats a kezayis. That's the pasuk in the Chumash, Erev Tochel Matzah. So the Halacha says that achila is a kezayis. And then the Halacha Moshe Messina also tells us that the kezayis have to be eaten within a certain time frame. You can't have like a bite now and another bite an hour from now. One has to eat the kezayis, what's called kedechilas pras, within the amount of time that a person would eat a significantly more, larger amount of food. Different opinions in the post about how much it is, anywhere from 2 to 9 minutes or so. One has to eat a kezayis within a certain time frame. So how much does that, what is that all about? So the reality is it's really not all that much. You know, I know there are a lot of charts and things that are sizes, a very, very big matzah books that are out there. The bottom line is the kezayis is really not all that much. The kezayis and matzah, again, an approximation of a kezayis and matzah on a regular standard hand matzah is probably smaller than a quarter of a matzah. So you're not talking about all that much. Excuse me. Hello? Yeah, if I'm just in the middle saying Shia, is it important? It's always important. Emergency should have been the correct one. So, one is supposed to eat a kezayis, and again, a kezayis is not a tremendous amount. L'chadchila, I tell people like this. A person is a healthy, Baruch Hashem, yeshiva bach, has got a good appetite, he can knock down a few pizzas at a time. You should take a nice big piece of matzah, should be, it's hard for me to say exactly. Half a hemata, third of a hemata. Should be a nice kazunta piece of matzah in order to eat the kazayas, felishim, sofek, alashitas, all the machmir. The biggest machmir were about a half a hematzah. So that's like the biggest chumrah. And a person can't, many people, older people, difficulty to eat so much matzah. So tell them the real shia. Well, the real shia is significantly less. It's somewhere around a quarter of a hematzah. Yeah, not that big. It's a quarter, a little less than a quarter is also good.
So you're saying we're supposed to have kazayas between the one and a half?
So in theory, if you had the one person at the seder, so you would have some poskim say you should have a kazayas of each. But if you have these big kazayas, if you have a half a head mat, so you're already eating more than a kazayas. You're eating more than two kazayas. You're eating more than three kazayas.
You're supposed to take some from each.
It should be a some from each. It's not practical to have a whole kazayas from each because you have 20 people at the seder. So it's not going to happen. Okay, so but lemaisa, the most important thing to be aware of is that a person should have the kazayis and matzah, and it should be kedechos pras. Again, we say kedechos pras is different amounts. The more correct time is somewhere around 4 or 5 minutes or so. So if you eat a quarter of a matzah within 5 minutes, it's not that difficult. You don't have to sometimes see people that are eating with stopwatches, they're gobbling, they're choking, they pass it out. You know, not deserve to do that. You know, just eat at a normal, take a nice piece of matzah. If you're a healthy person, take a half a matzah. You're not so healthy, a quarter of a matzah. Eat at a nice, normal pace. Enjoy yourself. Lean back. Machai, enjoy chizman chiruseinu, and don't get so nervous. That's the proper way to fulfill the mitzvah of the chilus matzah. If one is eating machine matzah, so there are different opinions about machine matzah. I'm talking about machine shmur matzah. One should not use the regular machine matzah for the seder. If one is eating machine shmur matzah, there are some opinions that have issues with them in terms of is that called baked lishma? The matzah is to be baked lishma. So it's turning on the machine called lishma. Not that was a big machlokas in the poskim. So those who have a tradition to eat the machine. Those who don't eat the machine, so eat the hand. If you have machine matzah, so then the shear comes out to. Approximately a third of a machine matzah, so a quarter of a machine matzah, the erech is approximately a kazai is about a third. So again, I'm not going to sit with a ruler either to figure it out, but it's not a tremendous amount of matzah either.
How much of
a
machine
matzah? I think about a third, approximately a third of a machine matzah. I think it could be a little bit less. Again, I'd sit with a. Good. So a person fulfills that mitzvah, that's mamish the mitzvah of their Isaac. Allow it to highlight the highlight of the Seder, then one moves on to eat the Mora.
So kazayas for the regular Sudas, Yom Tov is also one, I guess a lot of times use a machine also. So that's
they're like a third, around the third of matzah. Approximately, no, that's what the books say. Around, fair enough. If the matzah, so one has to eat maror. So maror is a mitzvah, midir abonim is manazer. Matzah is a mitzvah of their Isaac. Maror is linked to Karban Pesach. And matzah is a special pasuk for erev for matzahs that obligates us to eat matzah even today, even without Karban Pesach. But maror only exists in the Torah in the context of Karban Pesach. So one has to eat something which is one of the species of maror. So the Mishnah lists a whole series of different foods that are acceptable for maror. Some of them we don't have a tradition exactly what they are. Many of them we do. One that we do have an absolute tradition on is what the Rishon called lituga. Lituga is a Latin word for a lettuce. So lettuce is definitely considered to be one of the chamesh b'demara. That's what we the Dinaga Olam is today. So we assume that lettuce is a right. The lettuce that Chazal were referring to is probably romaine lettuce. So therefore, we prefer to use romaine lettuce for the seder. The Wapolski will permit even the use of other species like iceberg lettuce for the seder. But most people use romaine lettuce. If one is using romaine lettuce, that's a wonderful thing to use. Just one has to be very, very careful in terms of bugs, in terms of insects, infestation. Therefore, I strongly recommend that today one should try, if one is able to, one should use the pre-packed romaine lettuces that have an acceptable hashkafa on them.
Sand.
Oh, so not anymore. So there are new kinds now. So there are many of them now on the market. For many years, the only ones that were they used to call the Gush Katif lettuce. Originally, the greenhouses used to be actually in Gush Katif. Even unfortunately, after Gush Katif no longer existed, they moved the greenhouses. They reset up the greenhouses in Shderot. And another place, I actually visited them myself. I spent some time in the kibbutz in Tzeriv. I was thinking, I forgot about some other places. I went to Ashkelon. So I went to a few places last year when I went to see some Shemitah things. So I went to go look at some of the lettuce packaging, also, which was also a Shemitah issue as well, because the way they grow things in greenhouses during Shemitah, that's a whole convoluted way of growing to permit growing. Who's going to be someone? You have a trip, right? Okay, you can tell us about that. Remember that trip?
Yeah.
Exciting trip. So we actually went from, we saw the packaging of the lettuce from the greenhouse to the factory, right? Remember the Shneimot factory? To literally to your bag, to your dining room table. So those lettuces still exist. They're called Ale Katif now. And you can get them in any Havisha, any from supermarket. You can get them even down the down at Kifur over here, 186th Street. You can get the Ale Katif, they sell them, huh? And so over the last year or so, there have been other competitions that have come into play. I don't think they're a competition. I think they may have actually been started by the same people who brought you Ale Katif, except that somebody came up with a great idea that you can grow cheaper outside of Eretz Israel, I think. And what they did was they took all the technology, I think it was the Jewish company of Ale Katif, if I'm not mistaken, and they actually they built greenhouses, the same exact greenhouses that we saw in Ashkelon and Shderot, now exist, believe it or not, in Mexico and in Guatemala and in other places down south. And they're packaged from their mashgichim who are there, and it's all done. The idea being, it's grown in greenhouses in such a way that it's not a it avoids all the insect problems, all the checking of the lettuce things. So they now have from companies. You take go also. I don't know if they sell kefir, but if you go into any of the stores in Brooklyn or Muncie or those kind of places, you'll find the OU Gazashkach on some of them. There are other ones that come from Eretz Yisrael which have badats on them. There are others with other ashkachas on the kitzur, whatever it is. That's what I recommend for Maror, if you're able to, is to get your hands on one of these greenhouse grown. It'll say on them, greenhouse grown, doesn't have to be no checking required type of a lettuce in order to be to use. There are other romaine lettuces, prepackaged romaine lettuces that are out there in the market which are regular grown in the soil, which there are different opinions amongst Ashkaf organizations in America today, how much checking is necessary. There is a certain degree of checking that's done, according to others it's not sufficient, whatever it is. Those are regular plain, like, you know, dole lettuce or something, which will have certain Ashkafas on them. One should just be aware that even those who follow those opinions that are a little bit more lenient about some of those regular American lettuces, which are pre-washed lettuces, it's not always true. There are different, sometimes there are bad batches and they actually yank the hashkacha at different times. Believe it or not, the worst time for romaine lettuce is the March season. So very often what will happen is with those particular romaine lettuces that are relying on the mekilim, you'll find that the week before Pesach, you can't find them because those are the 2 weeks that they yank the hashkacha off of it because it's higher level of infestation. Therefore, I think the safer way, the more efficient way is if you live anywhere near from the community, to try to track down one of these other kind of lettuces, either the Ale Katif from Israel, the ones from Mexico, or Guatemala, wherever you want to go to. Obviously, it's nice to support our control as much as we can, but whatever is available to you, I think that's probably the better way to go.
Two
questions.
First, he says Ale Katif.
Ale Katif.
Also, what's the sand problem?
They grow these things in greenhouses, so nothing's growing in soil. So they grow them in all this kind of chemical stuff. I don't know what stuff is called, the little pots, the little stuff they brought from Sri Lanka or something. There's a whole polygon they've shown us. So there's some sand that's involved in some of the process. So sometimes certain brands weren't as clean as others. It wasn't a halakhic problem, just sometimes you would find some sand in the bags. So you wash it off with water. There's no sand on it anymore. No, so it's grown in such a way that Lamaise, it's not considered to be Gedulei Karka. The bottom line is it's not Gedulei Karka. So it's good enough for Bar Pri Adama, but it's not really Gedulei Karka. How that stunt works, we spoke about Berichos last year.
So if you don't get the Ale Katif,
if you're getting regular romaine lettuce,
what's the best procedure to check it?
Like regular romaine lettuce, you have to wash really well. You have to wash it in you get something called vegetable wash. There's a special thing in the stores you can get. You go to a regular fruit store, you get called vegetable wash. You have to soak it really well in this vegetable wash. If you don't have vegetable wash, you can substitute with some dish soap. Put it into a
vinegar.
Vinegar doesn't do as well a job. You should soak it. Vinegar causes halakhic problems for Moro. If you soak it in vinegar, it's possible for Moro. Right. So I would not soak it in vinegar. Okay, I would soak it in soap water for less than 24 hours. You don't want to soak it in soap water for 24 hours anyway. Right, so soak it in soap, in some kosher dish soap, throw it into a can of water or something, let it sit there for a while, then wash it off very well, and then you have to really look at each leaf and really, you know, get a good light. It's a pain. It's a hassle. I would strongly recommend to try to get a one of these other things. There were some communities that use horseradish for aurora. This is a throwback to Eastern Europe, where they didn't have a lot of these salads. They did have access to horseradish, so there are different chayim. So there are some, there are different customs about this. Those whose family has a specific custom to use this chayim, I'm not going to say no. Those who don't have this custom, probably not the greatest thing to run after, because there are some who had questions whether this is technically one of the species of mara that I mentioned in the Mishnah. Again, whatever different opinions about that. If one does use the horseradish, one cannot use the processed horseradish. One cannot use the horseradish in the jars, either the red or the white, because it's been soaked in vinegar. And once it's in vinegar, the Mishnah says that's not acceptable. So you would have to get raw horseradish and start grating it. Then you may not like doing that anyway, so it's probably better to find your salad. One has to eat a kazayis and moro. Again, a kazayis is not all that much of moro either. So a couple of leaves of lettuce, I don't know, it's hard for me to know exactly how much it is. Two leaves, I don't know, it's hard for me to know exactly how much it is, but it's not a whole package of lettuce. It's not that much. After one finishes the moro, so then one eats korech. So korech, one has to take another kazayis of matzah. And again, not such a good kazayis, another kazayis of maror. When one eats maror, both for the maror and for korech, one dips the maror into the charoses. Charoses, you prepack charoses, so you can make charoses yourself. Those are the apples and nuts and a little bit of wine or something, and throw in a couple of spices, and you get yourself charoses. One is not supposed to submerge it into the charoses to the point where you're only eating charoses and you're eating the maror as a sidekick. It's supposed to be basically maror, but it's a little bit of charoses on it. You shake off the extra charoses. You're supposed to taste the maror. You're not supposed to really taste. That's supposed to be really the tasting of the charoses. If you like charoses, you can eat charoses later, but the mitzvah is to eat the maror, not really to eat the charoses. So after one finishes the maror, then one goes to korech. Then shulchan orech is the meal. So there are some minhagim that are associated with the Seder night. So there's a minhag to eat eggs at the Seder. Usually people do it right after Korech, they eat the egg, as either a zechet l'churban or a zechet l'korban chagig, different reasons for the minhag, but that's the standard custom, at least in Ashkenazi communities, to eat eggs right after Korech. At the Seder, one is not supposed to eat roast meat. That's our minhag. There are different minhagim in the days of Chazal about this, but today it's pretty much universal minhag. We don't eat roast meat, lest somebody think that this may be related to the Korban Pesach. So one should not eat meat, one should not eat roast meat, or roast chicken, etc. If a person wants to prepare a kind of a roast, he should
roast
put a lot...
Also.
Yeah, all these things are all included. The loaf, the minhag is not to eat any of these roasted kinds of foods. One should roast it in water. If you want to have a roast turkey or something, so you should tell your mother to put in a lot of water into the pan, so that's not roasted, that's cooked. But if it's roasted, it's just a minimal amount of water, just in its old juice, so we refrain from eating that.
That's right, it's to prevent.
So people shouldn't think that this is a Korban Pesach. You see a guy eating roasted meat, oh, it's the Seder. Well, you don't want people to come away with that mistaken conclusion. After the Seder, after the meal is over, so we move on.
If the person wants to eat meat, it should be in a lot of...
It should be a lot of water. It should have been made in a lot of water. Right.
One
should try to have meat. One should always have meat at all the yomtiv meals if one is able to. After the meal is over, one shouldn't have so much meat at the Seder. You want to save a little bit of room for the afikoman, so then you have suffered and you have another kazayis of matzah for afikoman. You eat that when you're leaving. The afikoman really should be completed before chatzos. Once you try chatzos this year, is obscure for one. I don't remember the exact time, but in the New York area, a couple of minutes for one. One should try very hard to finish the afikoman by chatzos. One should really try to finish the fourth cup by chatzos also. If one, for whatever reason, isn't able to do that, it's not the end of the world. But one should try to do that if one is in control of the time of the Seder. But the afikoman, one should really try to finish before chatzos. Again, 1 o'clock is pretty late, so I think people are going to be more than happy to be done by that time. After afikoman, so then one obviously benches like one would normally bench, and then one says hallel. So hallel is pretty much the same as we said before. We started the hallel before, and we finished the hallel afterwards. And one has to just be careful then and women to say every single word of hallel. After benching is the third cup, after hallel is the fourth cup. Then near it's everything after that is just been hugging, chasal sin pesa, fayim chatzia laila, chagadja, whatever, everything, whatever it says by God, whatever your minhag is, you say.
Okay, in terms of
half-sakes in halal,
you shouldn't
be talking about halal. Just say halal.
If you have to, like, let's say, whatever, the guest decides to leave in the middle,
Is there a reason?
Rav Shalom, boxing with Rav Shalom.
No, but like being a prokem, maybe.
Being a prokem, maybe. Okay. Right. Whatever the rules are, being boxing in the creation, but that's the Gemara says the same as being boxing in halal. It's a little bit more calm because they don't say a bracha in the halal. So it's a little, right. According to some Rishon, there's still a problem with boxing. It's better to avoid it if, for whatever reason. You try to wait. If you see the guests are going to leave before halal's over, wish give them a big shalom aleichem before halal, and try. Don't give them a shalom aleichem and say shmo chabascha. They may misinterpret that. So.
What's the whole idea of saying
Shir Shirim? Shir Shirim is a custom because many Pesukim Shir Shirim are allegorical for Yetzias Mitzrayim. There are many allusions to Yetzias Mitzrayim in there. That's where the minhag came from.
So is
it's a beautiful minhag. Those who have a minhag should say
it. But it's not your minhag. Is there like better to say it? Or like,
it's a nice, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful minhag. You know, it's even more beautiful. You take a look at the Art School Shir Shirim, you read it in English, and you'll see what the allegory to the Yetzias Mitzrayim is. It'll be even more beautiful. So if you have time, you're not collapsing from going to sleep. So supposed to be up the whole night anyway, so until you fall asleep. As soon as you stay up for Shavuos, night doesn't appear, and the Gemara doesn't appear in the Shulchan Aruch. But staying up the Seder, that is a Tesefta. You're supposed to stay up the whole night of Pesach, learning the halachas and discussing it to Yitzchak, until you collapse from sleep. So after 4 kafur, that usually happens pretty early, so people are, not too much Mishayla. After the Seder is over, just a few things to be aware of. The one is not supposed to eat anything. After Afikomen, one is not, doesn't have anything else to eat or drink except for the Dalkozos. If one is very thirsty, one can have a cup of water, but besides that, one really, different from about tea and other things, but one shouldn't really be having soda or orange juice and things like that. The top of the Afikomen should remain in one's mouth. Many of them, they won't brush the teeth, even those who brush the teeth on Yom Tov, or won't use mouthwash, all these kinds of things. After the Seder is over, they want to remain. Keep touch the top of the matzah should be mefiv until the following morning.
Is that preferable?
I think it's such a minhag now. Such a pasuk say. I think it's quoted in Halacha. No? Somebody quotes it. Never heard of it. Somebody quotes it.
Makes sense.
I don't know if it's in the chuyuf. The idea is quoted. There is a minhag that we say a shortened version of Kriya Shema Alamita on the night of Pesach because it's a lel shiburim. So we do just say Hamapil in the first parak. We don't say those who say all these other things as additional. So don't say it on Pesach night. There was a minhag in some communities not to lock the door on Pesach night. I cannot advocate that minhag. You know, even though Baruch Hashem later we live in a safe neighborhood, but Levi's we lock the door on Pesach night. So if you live in Washer Heights, I would strongly recommend to lock the door on Pesach night. Okay, so that's pretty much trying to give a little bit of an overview. Obviously, one can talk a lot more about the Seder than was interested. I have 4 CDs on the Seder, so I try to concise it for now. It's about 4 hours of Shurim on the Seder. We have a few left, so if anyone's interested in contact me during the week, I'll try to get it to you.
Seder, you said you can talk about it.
Oh, yeah, we spoke about it. You said you lean to the left side. That's what you should do, lean to the left side. Support yourself in some way. Put a pillow on the left side and show. It's good enough. Okay? Okay, anyone has another form? I had one floating around.